Welcome back to Schneps Connects. Today, I am joined by Janelle Doris, CEO of StartCare, the nation's oldest and largest minority-led healthcare organization. With six community-based locations across New York, StartCare is a leader in addiction recovery, mental health services, and cutting-edge biomedical research, providing care to thousands of New Yorkers each year. Janelle has extensive experience from city and state government as well. He served as commissioner of the New York City Department of Small Business Services, was the founding executive director of the city's Office of Minority and Women-Owned Business Enterprises, and became New York State's first chief diversity officer following Superstorm Sandy, where he managed a $4.4 billion recovery effort. Today, we'll dive into his inspiring story and journey from immigrating to the U.S. to shaping public policy and driving impact in government to now leading one of the nation's most transformative healthcare organizations. So, Janelle, thanks so much for joining. I really appreciate your time and looking forward to this conversation.
Absolutely, Joshua. Thank you for having me on. This is exciting.
Well, listen, I personally believe that, you know, mental health is one of the biggest issues facing our city and probably across the nation, but, you know, focused on New York City, it's a major issue here. So I'm really, you know, excited to hear about the services that your organization is providing. But I really would love to start with just you. I mean, you know, being an immigrant, I'd love to hear your story and your background.
Yeah, no. So, you know, thanks again for having me on. You know, I think my story is a similar story to most, you know, immigrants who've come to this country for centuries on end, right? You know, seeking an opportunity, seeking the way to better one's life, you know, coming to live the American dream. And I'm no different. My family's no different. You know, I came here, you know, when I was 9 years old, JFK, you know, from Guyana to New York, and then moved to Brooklyn and raised in Vandeveer housing complex there, which, you know, was always an interesting place to be, if you know, back in the day in those times. And, you know, kind of sort of, you know, navigating what it means to be a newcomer to America at that time as a young man, and sort of working my way through school. And, you know, at that time, kind of figuring out, you know, how to fit in and just trying to figure out what's the opportunities that are there for me. So for me, you know, our family, you know, is really about, you know, faith, the community values that we have, you know, how we see ourselves, and, you know, happen to be, you know, a child of two ordained ministers as well, and pastors, and taught you a lot about, you know, what it means to give back and what it means to be, you know, in public service. Both of them were social workers, my parents, and worked for an ACS at the city, and which is great for us and our family. So, yeah, I mean, that's a part of our journey. And of course, you know, you work hard. We've been taught over and over again. So I always tell people, you know, my first job was the Summer Youth Program in Brevoort Park there in Ralph and Fulton Street, $4.25 an hour. Well, it seems such a far time ago, working real hard, but learning and seeing even what I'm doing today, you know, really seeing the evidence of it all the way back then and still the challenges that we face today. So our legacy as a family is around public service and commitment to community. And I, you know, that's why I kind of continue to do the work I do in the spirit that I'm doing.
So listen, I can relate to that because I worked for now with my mother, you know, so she shaped, you know, a big part of what my career became and what I got involved in, you know, from an early age. So I certainly understand that. So you worked in city government during some pretty tough times, both during COVID and during Sandy. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about those roles that you played during some of those difficult times.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I tell people this all the time. I said, you know, I think from both of those, I'm sort of still in recovery myself in the sense of like, just trying to get back to, you know, I don't know, normal, if you may, because, you know, both Sandy is so traumatic on so many levels for, you know, people even to this day, right? And all that happened there. And so, you know, being able to give back to the community while working and being able to kind of help, you know, those 33 or so counties that were impacted adversely across the state recover, you know, that's one of the things I think I've, you know, done in my career. You know, one of the things helping people get back in their homes and providing resources and also helping businesses participate in that process, and particularly minority women-owned businesses who kind of been shut out of these processes for some time, and really developing, you know, sort of great communities which are thriving now across the state based upon the work that was done. So that's real lives, right, being transformed, real lives being changed, people's sort of, coming back into their spaces, but also understanding it was a time, a really difficult time for our state, really. And then, COVID for the world, right? And so as it pertains to being difficult and really an unimaginable event that no one really thought could happen at this scale. And, being asked to take over SBS at the time, Small Business, excuse me, Services. First of all, I'm, grateful because to have the trust, of the mayor at the time to kind of lead the city in that effort. I always say, we have the folks who are in the hospital system, really first responders. We have, of course, our safety, public safety, our, first responders. And then we have, the people who are responsible for the businesses and the workforce and the engine of the city. And that was us. And, it was really, a difficult time to see the fact that, businesses, had to close. People, jobs were being lost. The city went from, 4% unemployment to 20. We were responsible for all of the Workforce One centers. That's training people, connecting them to work, all these things, getting the city to reimagine how it's functioning. And that was a lot. It took a lot, but it was work that we all got up every day and was proud to do, right? I was out a lot. I was one of those commissioners who liked to be in the field. I was out in COVID, and it was really till after I think everything sort of opened back up and died down a long time afterwards. That's when I actually got COVID. But we were out 120 times on blocks and streets everywhere, marching up and down corridors, bringing services directly to folks. But I also saw the devastation, right? Because I believe we needed to see it firsthand. And so we had to push through a lot of policies, billions of dollars of support that we had facilitated through small businesses, and the list goes on. But it was a tough time, and but I think it showed the resiliency of the city and the resiliency of, people who are committed to public service and each other. Because I think for me, that's what really stood out, right? This collaborative community effort that actually occurred during that time and the innovation that came out of that that we're actually living with today,
I mean, listen, it must have been a time that really pushed the barriers for your team, because a lot of people, they didn't sign up for that when they first started their jobs, right? But they had to deal with what the situation was.
Yeah, we needed to pivot just like everybody else was, right? And, I think that's one of the beautiful things about being in public service. You make a decision and it impacts a great deal of folks, meaning that if you make the right decision, if you make the right choices when it comes to public policy and how we do what we do, you have a positive impact and effect on so many people. And for me, that's what really continues to drive me in the work that we do, right? We get to make that change that will impact not only us, but really our city, which is the lifeblood of our country, which is really the capital, financial capital of the entire world. And we
For
were
sure.
able to do something to make sure that that engine kept going and it's sustainable. And we were able to, get all the success we're seeing now, really, in my view, is really based upon a lot of the work that was done back then, and we're really seeing things, shift and moved in the right direction.
So let's talk about your current organization, StartCare. When did you first hear about StartCare or get introduced to them?
Yeah, I got introduced to this organization, through a former board chair of the organization. And it was right when my term was ending with as a commissioner. And they were looking for someone to come in with, sort of the business acumen, but also who were, connected to the community and understand the work. Now, I'm a minister as well. And, I've dealt with people on many levels when it comes to, mental health and substance use issues, right? From that side, right? So helping support families, helping work with people who were traumatized or impacted by this, being there sadly at, presiding and or being at where people have died from some of these challenges, right? And so for me, I've already had the impact. And then, looking at my first job I mentioned before, where, in that park we saw, signs and the evidence of, the crack cocaine epidemic that was really, still infiltrating our communities, right? I saw it as a 14-year-old kid. And it was real to me. I saw it where we were living. This opportunity opened up, and I said, hey, I want to continue to do that. I want to continue to give back. I want to continue to be a part of public service, this extended version of what public service looks like for me. And that journey sort of brought me to StartCare and to see that, oh, we can do some transformative work. I've heard of Dr. Benny J. Prim, who's the founder. And that man is a legend to himself, right? And how he sort of is a national leader in the space and drove the work and practice across the entire country, serving
So
four
share a little
presidents.
bit more about him and his work and the mission of StartCare. I'd love to understand that a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Dr. Prim, legendary physician, he was an anesthesiologist at Harlem Hospital and saw many of the soldiers coming home back to the community who were dealing with mental health, right, and substance use issues. And he says, look, we've got to do something about it. And so he stepped out and started our organization. At the time it was ARTC, Addiction Research and Treatment Corporation, because you have to understand research is very important. We are a research institute still. Research is so critical because, as a research organization, you get to learn and understand the issues. And then, as a treatment organization, you get to put the solutions into practice, right? In our clinics, in our sites. So, he was a legendary physician, traveled the country, served four presidents, and moved around the country with icons such as Magic Johnson and Coretta Scott King and the like, right? To really address within communities of color, and particularly Black and Brown communities, the issues around addiction, HIV/AIDS at the time, and all the like. So, his vision of having a holistic care model that really is integrated, that was really a new idea and concept back then, right? Where you could come to one place and get this comprehensive integrated care model that makes sure that people get well. So tens of thousands of people later, here we are serving, thousands again every single year. So our mission statement, I know I have to say it, is your care. It really is our mission. Our mission is your care. And it's so important for us to let people know that. That's why we exist. We exist to care for you, to make sure you have the best high quality care. And that all came from our founder, Dr. Benny J. Prim.
Where are the six community-based locations that you have?
Yes, I'm glad you said that. I heard earlier, no, it's really seven, and we're
Oh,
excited
great.
about that. So we have seven
Great.
actual physical locations, and within that, we have multiple different programs we run. But we are in Fort Greene, Brooklyn. We are in Bushwick, Brooklyn. We're also in East New York, Brooklyn. We're in
Great.
Harlem. We're in East Harlem, Washington Heights, and in the South Bronx. And the thing, I think what you understand and can see in all those areas, historically, there's been a lot of challenges when it comes to mental health and substance use, right? And Dr. Prim had a model that he wanted to bring the resources to where it's needed the most. And so everywhere that we are placed, places where, there have been significant challenges. And so we can really interact and be there with the
Yep.
community and help them to get better and get well.
So give me a sense. Somebody comes in there. What are the types of services that people can get?
We provide a full range of wraparound services. So, if you think about, walking into a hospital to get support and help is essentially the same thing. We have a clinical side to what we do. So there are clinicians here, there are doctors here, psychiatrists here, a mental health specialist here. We have nurses, it's a hospital, right? Where we're actually clinically taking care of people and meeting their needs. But that's not all that we have been doing, right? For now, 55 years, going on 56 years that we've been doing this work. We also have the wraparound services that leads to everything from job training and vocational training and program. By the way, last year, over 300 people got permanent jobs through this program. And
Love
if
it.
you can think about it, these are people with substance use or mental health challenges, right? So it takes another level of support in order for us to get them to into those positions, but we were able to do that. And that's every year, right? Every day we're working on that. We also work in community education, educating the community about these challenges. We do trainings, workshops. We also, talk to the community about what it means to work with individuals who are suffering from mental health and also other challenges. So, that's something that's very important because we have to understand each other, right? For
Listen, there's
me,
also,
this
I think,
is.
a big stigma around people with mental health, either personally not wanting to address it, right? Or, people understanding other people's problems.
Absolutely. And that's it, right? If it's clinical, if it's specialty care, if it's job training, if it's, anything of the sort, it all sort of hovers around the stigma that we see where people are, are confronted with every day about, hey, if I leave here and I go someplace else for care, right? We know for sure that 80% of the time they never make it. Why? Because they're afraid. The stigma that's going to follow, letting them know that, if I go there, somebody's going to, look down on me. They're going to think that I'm not as who I say I am, right? They're going to think of me as something else or another. But when they're in our facility, they get the full wraparound services, mental health services, clinical services, everything that they need, job training, et cetera, for the moment. And I think that's so important. That's why I think the focus on who we are is so critical. And one thing I want to add there, because I kind of, forgot to mention it. Also, we got mental health, provider. And when we think about what that means, we look at the entire mental health spectrum of individuals and age groups. So we're helping and working with young people as young as 7 years old right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that because it's a big issue now, especially with the use of technology, and the kids are really struggling as well. So that's good.
Yeah, from seven all the way to, I think, our oldest 76 years old in our program. So we have the full spectrum of life. When you think about, youth mental health, which was our adolescent teen start program, with 13-year-olds to 17, 18-year-olds, when you think about that program and you look at the statistics that we're dealing with now, they're so scary. You've got, some reports came out from the Department of Health, essentially 9% of high schoolers attempted suicide. That's
Wow, that's scary.
27,000 kids. 27,000 kids. Now, if you think about what that means, my daughter, it's personal to me. My daughter is going into high school next year, and I'm thinking about this reality about, the challenges that our young people are faced with. And for me, our young people are some of the most vulnerable population that we have, but they're the most promising ones, right? And so what do
Sure.
we do to help them to, sustain themselves during these really difficult times? How do we deal with some of this trauma that they're dealing with? And so for me, that's why we just enjoy doing this work, particularly with our young people. And we're doing a lot of that sort of creative work, addressing the trauma, us, being with them and making sure that they have an opportunity to overcome whatever they're dealing with for them to fulfill their full potential in life.
And what do people need in order to walk in the door? I mean, do they need a certain type of health insurance? What would be like the requirements that someone would need to take advantage of your services?
We serve everybody, even if you don't have the ability to pay. I mean, we have an obligation to serve, and we'll continue to serve. Help facilitate. Most of our population is below the federal poverty rate. And so, they have Medicaid, Medicare, so we're able to help facilitate the insurances for them. But, we don't turn anybody away for care.
That's great to hear because, especially in the communities you're in, I'm sure there are a lot of people that don't have health insurance.
Yeah, and they don't. But a lot of times it's that folks don't know what's available to them. And so there, there are programs that we help facilitate and get them into so that they can have continuity of care, not just with us, right? But other providers that they may need to go and see, specialty care that they need, et cetera. But most of the people we serve are Medicaid, Medicare patients.
Have there been threats in terms of cuts to Medicaid that are affecting your centers?
Yeah, we are very concerned. I don't think we can understate sort of the concern within the community now, the broader sort of larger medical community and service providers. For our patients that we work with, it's life or death. If you think about it, every single day, Think about suicide, youth suicides. You think about substance use issues and challenges that can cost someone their lives. When you think about, Narcan distribution and training cuts, when you think about, the most essential medical care that someone may need, primary care for whatever they may be dealing with, people with, diseases such as HIV, AIDS, hepatitis C, all these challenges, and, to cut their opportunity to get care is really cutting their opportunity to be here and to live. And so for us, this is a big deal. This is really, a big challenge for those we serve. And so, we're monitoring everything. We're checking to make sure we're doing everything that we can. We believe that, overdose deaths are, for some people are saying it somewhat stable, some saying going down, but in the communities we serve, we're actually seeing either it's, ticking up quite a bit within certain populations, right? And we have to be careful, or else we're going to see additional spikes, especially in Black and Brown communities. And so for us, when we're talking about, these sort of broad Medicaid policy work, I mean, the challenge around how do we present and give equitable care when there's not equitable access, that's such a critical, detriment to the whole system as a whole.
And are there specific policies on the federal level around healthcare and funding beyond Medicaid that are impacting a lot of those Black and Brown communities that you're serving?
Yeah, I think we just got to think through around, we hear the term around equity. We hear the term around, diversity and inclusion, all these things. For us, it's more about, well, who actually is being impacted the most? Who is actually dying the most? Who is actually, being prevented from getting care, meaning access to the care? And we're seeing this again more and more within the communities. So the other thing is, people may hear something, and we know that these cuts, wherever, again, we're all unpacking it, right? Every day there's sort of like a sense of what it is that's going to happen and how the eligibility is going to be impacted. And a huge one for us is around food. When you think about the number one issue from our patients that they listed this year, are listed as the number one issue for them is food insecurity, the number one social determinants of health. For the first time in our history, housing was trumpeted by food insecurity. And so for us, when you talk about SNAP benefits and those types of things, that's who rely on this. So how is that going to impact, right? How's that going to impact them when it comes to having nutritional food and how it impacts your health? And so there's a lot of,
And I
again,
guess that's mental health too, right? I mean, worrying about being able to eat tomorrow or feed your kids, I mean, that can drive somebody crazy, I'm sure.
And we're concerned that, you don't have healthy food and you have multiple health challenges, right? We know food is critical to that. And if you don't have that, then, the likelihood of people perishing and, mentally from substance use, from other types of challenges, when you can manage, you have diabetes, you have to even manage that, right? You have, other types of diseases or issues health-wise, you have to manage that. And if you're not able to manage that, then the crisis will ensue and will continue. And I think we're going to see something that we don't want to see, which going backwards instead of moving forward when it comes to helping and supporting.
Yeah. Let's talk about HIV/AIDS. You mentioned that earlier, and you don't hear a lot about HIV and AIDS anymore. So I'm curious to hear what work you're doing in regards to that.
Yeah, so, start in the 80s when the crisis was amplifying, START was working. Well, back then we were ARTC, and Dr. Prem was a lead researcher in the space. And he actually worked with the Clinton administration and Maxine Waters and others to really craft the response from the federal government to communities. And he was really the architect of that work. And so a lot of the research and testing and so forth was done with START and within START, right? And they were able to produce, those research and be able to make sure that people are, sort of know that they can remove the stigma right? And they can actually get help and support. So Dr. Prim and the organization did a lot of work there. And so we still, look, HIV/AIDS, there's medication obviously for it. Our job is to ensure that people are taking their medication, that people are aware. It's more about, ensuring that those who are engaged in active drug use understands all of the challenges that can come from that, all the ways that HIV/AIDS can be transmitted. So we do talk a lot about educating people and also making sure that the services we provide also has this particular service and which we have for this specialty care for those who are living with HIV/AIDS and also are, struggling with mental health or substance use issues.
You're in a lot of underserved communities, and you brought up one, East New York. And I personally, think that there's certain pockets of this city, I hate to use the word forgotten, but certainly could use more services on many levels. I'd love to hear like your plans and goals and vision around, that location and, really what you see as next for StarCare in terms of your services and evolution.
Yeah, I mean, so this is where I get excited for me, right? Like East New York is critical to, the future of our organization and for us is as we kind of reimagine what care looks like in a community like East New York, right? We don't want to forget East New York. We want to invest in East New York.
I
We
love
don't
it.
want to push East New York aside. We think East New York should be prioritized. And so that's what we're doing. Our facility there, we've been there for several decades and, it needs some repair. And so we're calling on our elected officials, we're calling on philanthropy to help us as we take this building and turn this facility into something that is transformative. We are in that building alone. We have a floor that is dedicated to the community. We have, a community center we're putting in, innovation hub we're putting in, a job training
Love it.
center. We have also culinary arts program, a commercial kitchen program that we're putting in there for small businesses in the area can come and use, that community groups can come and use. It's a massive community hub on the third floor. On the second floor is where most of our mental health services are going to be, where we're going to make sure that, everyone from 5 years old all the way till their old age can come and get resources and be able to see someone, speak to someone, and get, all the help they need. And then on the first floor, we'll continue our work with those with substance use and other challenges, medical challenges, et cetera. So you'll have a building, you can put it in a pharmacy in there, sort of because that's a pharmacy desert as well, right? So people need to get their medication. Where can they go? They have to travel distances to get that. We want to bring everything and have a hub there. It's 40,000 plus square feet of redevelopment that we're working on there. And we're very excited of what it can be for the community. And so, we're seeking help and support for those who can help us do it. But this is it, man. We know thousands and thousands of people can come there. Everything from job training to medical help and support to community gathering and wellness. That's what we're looking forward to. And doing it in a way, by the way, that's never been done before, not at this level, where you have a full-fledged clinic and all these other issues being helped and addressed from food insecurity to jobs to access to care and even housing, in the sense of making sure people have an opportunity to learn where housing is and provide services. And we're hoping that we're able to acquire some additional property so we can actually build affordable housing and supportive housing. So for folks who actually need it. I'm so excited. I'm about to jump out this chair and I hope you hear it in my voice. This is a critical, critical plan and project for our organization, but most importantly for those we serve.
Well, listen, I'm glad you could share that, and hopefully we can continue to cover the progress of that in our media because I think it's an important story for people to be investing in underinvested communities. I think one, flag in the ground leads to others, and one improvement on a corner makes someone else come into the middle of that block. So really,
Absolutely. We
thrilled to hear about. How can people make donations, or do you have like an annual event that's your big fundraiser? How can people support the StarCare?
Yeah, no, thank you. And certainly for the East New York hub, you know, that hub is going to be part of what we're raising a lot of funds for. But we have our annual gala that happens every year. And this year it will be in October. More to come on that. We are excited about that. You can go to our website at startny.org and you can get all the information there. Once you log on to the site, it pops up to let you know what we're getting ready to do. And wherever we get ready to make sure that we are celebrating. So it's October 23rd, and we are excited, you know, and we're looking forward. We have honorees. We have, you know, it's a wonderful program. It's going to be at the TD Bank headquarters in Grand Central. And
Perfect,
so
sure.
it, yeah.
Well, listen, Janelle, thank you so much for your time and sharing everything that your organization is doing. I could talk to you for another hour, really, about the services that you're providing and the need that there is in New York City. So, you know, I'm glad you're working at it every day, you and your team. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
No, it was a pleasure. For everyone listening, please subscribe wherever you listen to Schneps Connects podcast. You can obviously stream us on all major podcast platforms and are on our website at podcast.schnepsmedia.com.